Today we are going to discuss Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur, Madhurya Kadambini. Madhurya Kadambini, Madhurya means sweetness, and Kadambini means the cloud, the nectarian cloud that flows the nectar of Krishna consciousness, the shower of Krishna consciousness that's going to inundate the whole world. And so in this book, Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur is gradually explaining the gradual elevation of devotion. He starts with how devotion actually begins. Like devotional service, it has been described like adau shraddha tato sadhu sanga athava anasamidrit athava bhajana kriya. Like first one develops shraddha. The first stage of devotion is shraddha. Shraddha means faith. Faith on the process of rendering devotional service. That shraddha has been defined in Chaitanya Charitamrita as that unflinching faith that if I render devotional service, then everything is accomplished. If I just render devotional service, I don't have to do anything else. Krishna bhakti koile sarva karma krita hai. All activities are performed if we just render devotional service. But Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur is going one step backward. He is asking that what actually produces shraddha? From what faith actually develops? What is the cause of devotion? So then he concludes from the scriptures that bhakti is ahaituki. Ahaituki means causeless. Ahaituki means unconditional. There is nothing that is the cause of devotion. Ahaituki, there is no... he is explaining that causeless actually means that bhakti doesn't generate from fruitive activities or pious activities or performance of yoga or jnana, cultivation of knowledge. All these activities do not actually give rise to devotion. Then the question is, what is the cause of devotion then? What actually produces devotion? What actually generates devotion? Like if we wonder, if we question why or how we happen to join ISKCON, how we happen to develop devotion, how we happen to step into this platform of devotional service, what will be the answer? Yes, I'm so. Right. Yeah. So we can see, like, why we are here. What made us join ISKCON? Prabhupada's causeless mercy. It is Prabhupada who actually brought us here. If Prabhupada was not here, if Prabhupada didn't come, then we wouldn't have been in this platform of devotion. So it is the mercy of a devotee that actually generates. The causeless mercy of a devotee, which is the cause of devotion. The only cause of devotion is the mercy of devotees. Due to the mercy of devotees, we develop devotion. So that's the first thing he actually established. There is no other way to develop devotion. We can see like how the devotees join. Most of devotees join because they somehow or other came in contact with Srila Prabhupada's books. How many of you here joined the movement being actually reading Srila Prabhupada's books? Yeah, practically all. Everyone has practically joined by reading Srila Prabhupada's books. So Prabhupada's mercy is being showered upon this world in the form of his books. That's why book distribution is so important. That's why Prabhupada emphasized
so much in book distribution.
Because these books are going to bring devotees in. These books are actually the manifestation of Srila Prabhupada's mercy. These books are going out, and whoever reads will become a devotee. I can give you an example. In France, there is an elderly person, now he is 64 years old. I mean, he's the kind of a person one never thinks. I mean, usually one would not, even in his remotest dream, think him of becoming a devotee. And he's a retired company executive. Very fired, very passionate. I mean, passionate. I mean, of course, sometimes he becomes negatively passionate also. And so this man somehow received the Bhagavad Gita sometime. And he kept the Bhagavad Gita in his shelf, never bothered to read it. And now one day, at that time he was 61 years old, about 3 years ago. He became sick. He developed some kind of back problem which caused him some temporary paralysis. And he was bedridden for about 2 months. And so when he was lying in bed, all he can do is just read books. So one day he just happened to pick up this Bhagavad Gita as it is and started to read it. And as he started to read it, he felt that this makes a lot of sense. Whatever has been written in Bhagavad Gita makes a lot of sense. And by the time he finished reading Bhagavad Gita, he became very curious. He started to, he wanted to see these great people who were actually practicing this process. And at the back of the thing, there was the address of our new Mayapur farm. And when he got well, the first thing he did, drove all the way from Brittany to New Mayapur, which is about 700 kilometers. About 700 kilometers, he drove. And the day he arrived there happened to be just the day before Gaur Purnima. And he was so impressed seeing the devotees and the way they live their life. And already he was philosophically convinced, but he was not really convinced enough to accept the process. And then, when he saw the devotees, he was literally shedding tears of ecstasy. And especially when he saw the Janmashtami and Gaur Purnima festival. And then the devotees told him how they are struggling to save New Mayapur. At that time, in 87, we almost lost. There was hardly any possibility of saving New Mayapur. And he gave assurance, okay, I'll help. And that person not only joined the movement, he sold his property. He sold all that he had. And he actually asked me what he should do with it, whether he should give the whole thing to the temple. I mean, he was willing to give all that he had. But I told him to give half to his children. He had 2 sons and 2 daughters. So he divided his wealth, half he gave to his children and half he gave to his son. And he is a full-time devotee. And his name is Parthasarathi. He actually played a very significant role, very important role in saving New Mayapur. So, and all because of Srila Prabhupada's book. I mean, he is just like, I mean, who can imagine a 62-year-old retired company executive to join the movement? When a young hippie joins, that's one thing. Probably they don't have anything better to do, so might as well become a Hare Krishna. But a person who is almost he kind of retired and he is supposed to lead a relaxed, retired life, but he actually comes and becomes a full-time devotee. And it's not easy for a person like him to adjust with these young devotees. Because a person of that age, his life becomes so set. it becomes the flexibility is reduced considerably in persons like that, and then it needed a lot of adjustment. And not only that, he moved into the temple in New Mayapur. He also brought his old mother. She is 83 years old, 84 years old. I mean, his feeling was that she's going to die, so let her die in Krishna conscious atmosphere. And she's also a very, very pure person. She's 84 years old, but she just looks like a child, just like a little girl, you know. I mean, her whole composure is so innocent. And so this is how Srila Prabhupada's books actually influence people. Often I wonder that it would be very interesting, it would be very nice to compile a book describing how different devotees came to Krishna consciousness, how different devotees joined them. You thought the same thing? They lived together. Because I have noticed every devotee has a story. It's a very, a story that is more exciting than fiction. So, what is the cause of devotion? Priyavrata? Yeah. How does one develop devotion? Yeah, the mercy of devotees. That's the only reason, only means to come to Krishna consciousness. Then, Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur is describing that the devotional, I mean, after one receives devotional, the seed of devotional creeper, a bhakti-lata bij, like this also we have to consider, like brahmanda bhumite kono bhagyavan jeev, Guru Krishna Prasade Pai Bhakti Lata Bij. By the mercy of the Lord, by mercy of Krishna, one gets the Guru, and by the mercy of the Guru, he gets the Bhakti Lata, the seed of devotional service. Now, the seed of devotional service, when planted in the field of heart, in the field of the heart, and if the heart is not drying, like a desert, due to sinful activity. That's why Prabhupada was so emphatic that once we become a devotee, we must give up sinful activity. Giving up sinful activities means refraining from this four sinful actions, four sinful acts. Because these four sinful acts are the four legs of sin: meat eating, intoxication, gambling, and illicit sex. So, when one indulges in these activities, his heart becomes harder and harder. His heart becomes dry. Especially intoxication, anyway, all sinful activities are very detrimental to spiritual advancement. So when one stops these sinful activities, then his heart becomes fertile. It's like warding off all the unwanted elements from the field of heart. Like if you are preparing the field, what you have to do first? First thing you have to do is just clean up the field. You plow the land, and while plowing the land, all kinds of stones and unwanted things come up. So you clear them out, then prepare the field. Then what you do? You pour fertilizer, right? So this way we have to prepare the field. And then you plant the seed of devotional creeper. Now when you plant the seed of devotional creeper, then in order to make it sprout, the seed, in order to make the seed sprout, you have to water the seed. So how do you water? By hearing and chanting. Watering by hearing and chanting. Shravan Kirtan Jali, with the water of hearing and chanting. Now when we start watering the plant, then the seed sprouts in a seedling. So when the seedling comes out,
there first there are two leaves.
Right? Those two leaves are Kleshogni and Shubhada. Kleshogni means it destroys all miseries or afflictions, sufferings, and Shubhada, it bestows all kinds of auspiciousness. So when we take to the devotional service, then all the miseries are eliminated. And the life immediately becomes free from misery. And our life becomes full of auspiciousness. Now klesha means suffering. And gna means to kill. Like dina poshubna, poshubna, ripugna. Ripugna, ripu means enemy and gna means one who kills or to kill. And one who kills is called gni. So klesha gni. Devotional service is a feminine gender, that's why it's gni. If it was masculine gender, then it would have been gna. Like Krishna's name is Ripugna. Ripugna. Because the masculine is the killer of the enemy. And Bhakti Devi, Bhakti is feminine, that's why it's Gni. So, Klesha Gni, the killer of devotion service, devotion, Bhakti to Krishna, is killer of misery. And then he describes the five kinds of misery, five kinds of suffering, not misery, the suffering. They are known as avidya, asmita, rag, dvesh, and abhinivesh. This is actually taken from Patanjali's yoga aphorism. The third aphorism describes five kinds of klesha. Are you familiar with the word klesha? There is a verse in Bhagavad Gita that says, klesha adhikatara stesham abhyakta shakta chetasham. Those who are attached to abhyakta, unmanifest or impersonal voyeurism, they simply get more and more suffering. Klesha adhikatara stesham. Abhyakta shakta chetasham. Abhyakta hi gotir dukham. The abhyakta, this attachment to impersonalism, simply leads or simply increases sufferings, because it simply generates, it can generate only suffering. So those who are actually attached to impersonalism, they're simply inviting more and more suffering. So the klesha, there are five kinds of klesha. Five kinds of suffering. Avidya. Avidya literally means ignorance. Now what is ignorance? Real ignorance or actual ignorance is to consider temporary to be eternal. This material nature is temporary. But to consider this temporary material nature to be eternal is avidya, ignorance. To consider the material nature to be real. This material nature is just a temporary manifest, temporary reflection. In some other place, it has been described that this material nature is just a reflection. In the monsoon, when there is, you can see in Mayapur, during monsoon time, the water accumulates on the field. And then in the water you see the reflection of the trees. Now these reflections will last only as long as the water is there. But soon after the monsoon, the water evaporates. And the land and the fields become dry. Can you see the reflection anymore? No. So similarly, this material manifestation is
temporary like that. It's just a momentary reflection of the spiritual reality. But we unfortunately, due to our ignorance, we mistake the reflection to be real. If we consider the reflection of a tree to be real, will it be very intelligent? Will it be very intelligent, Jyotirmay? If we consider a reflection of a tree to be real, now say you are very hungry, and in the reflection of a tree you are seeing some beautiful fruits, and you swim to get the fruits. So will it ever satiate your hunger?
No.
Similarly, in this material nature, none of our desires are actually fulfilled. Everyone is hungry and thirsty. In this material nature, everyone is thirsty for enjoyment. And in the reflection, we are seeing some fruits. But running after those fruits, our thirst is never quenched. Our thirst for enjoyment is never quenched. So, in this way, the first thing, the first cause of suffering is avidya, ignorance. And what is ignorance, Priyavrata? What is the definition of ignorance? I just mentioned.
The word comes from, ignorance comes from ignore. Ignorance doesn't mean you're actually aware of it. It's like red light, green light. Men are supposed to stop at the green light, but he's ignoring it because he thinks not being seen.
That's a very nice and nice definition. Hansel Dukur just pointed out the word ignorance is coming from the root word ignore. Ignore means not to accept. Right? So to not to accept the real reality, but instead to accept the reflection to be real. To consider the unreal to be real is ignorance. To consider material nature to be real is ignorance. So then, Ashmita, the second cause of suffering is Ashmita. Ashmita means, in simple words, me and mine. But the definition of Ashmita has been given as to consider the senses to be the self. To consider self-perception, to mistake the senses to be the observer. When you consider the senses to be the real perception, one who perceives, observer and perceptor, anyway. So, one who to consider the senses or sense perceptions to be real. Me and mine is coming from that. Me, I have real me, but by mistake I am thinking that this body to be me. And things that are in relation to this body are mine. So that is called Ashmita. That is the cause of suffering. Then Rag. Rag means attachment. Attachment to the objects that are pleasing to our senses is called Rag. And Dvesh is aversion to suffering. When something is not conducive to our senses, sense perception, then that is, we are averse to those. In winter, we are averse to cold, but attached to heat. So, this attachment to heat in winter is Raj. And aversion to cold in winter is Dvesh. Iccha Dvesha Samuttena Danda Mohena Bharata. This aversion and attachment is caused due to the duality of this material nature. And then Abhinivesh. Obedience means absorption or attachment to body and fear from death. Obedience means the attachment to the body and fear from death. Now these are the five types of the five causes of five kinds of creation, five different types of suffering, five kinds of causes of suffering. Now one way one becomes engaged in devotional service is kleshabhi. These sufferings or causes of sufferings are immediately destroyed. As if Bhakti Devi with a sword in her hand starts to slaughter them. Now when one is situated in devotional service, does he, let us consider now, it's very important to practically consider in our own lives since we are practicing devotional service. Do we have avidya? Are we still in ignorance? Ever since we were in ignorance, there's no doubt about this, unless you are a self-realized soul from your birth. Like everyone was actually in ignorance, right? But ever since we came to devotional service, didn't we realize that this material nature is temporary, and our actual objective, actual goal is the spiritual sky, back home, back to God. So we are free, we have become free from avidya. Why? Because of taking shelter of devotional service. Ashmita, me and mine, has been reduced considerably, although we may not have become completely free from that. Like, that we have seen, like before we became devotees, we are so attached to our family, our friends, our possession. But after we became devotees, so easily we could give them up. Of course, if one has a relative who is a devotee, then it's different. That kind of attachment is positive attachment. For example, Priyavrata has a son, Sumit, who is 8 years now? 9? Oh, he's 11 now. Mm-hmm. Right, that's right. That's right. Yeah. He's such a sweet boy, a very nice devotee actually. I mean, he's actually fighting alone in the family now that Priyavrata left his family. Like, he wouldn't take any non-vegetarian food, and he likes to come to the temple. So, Priyavrata has some attachment to his son. But that's a positive attachment because he wants his son to become Krishna devotee when he grows up. And so similar, in this way, we can develop our attachment to Krishna, to things that are Krishna conscious. Anukullasya sankalpa. Devotees accept whatever is favorable to Krishna consciousness, but they reject whatever is detrimental to Krishna consciousness. So, when one becomes a devotee, or rather after we became devotees, we have given up this ashmita, me and mine. But this me and mine has actually got a spiritual shape now. We did not give up me and mine. But we have developed a positive concept of me and mine. That me, yes, I am a servant of Krishna. I got a new identity now. Previously we used to think that I am the Lord of this nature. Right. But that identity has been transformed now, that I am the servant of Krishna. And mine, that Krishna, I am Krishna. Mine has become transformed into Krishna. There is nothing mine, but I am Krishna. And whatever is Krishna's, I am related to that. So, ashmita, Then rag, we are attached to so many things. We are attached to our motorbike. We are attached to...
what not?
But those attachments were simply, those were simply the objects of our sense gratification. Isn't it? But after we become devotees, we have given up. And me, my rag, desh, we used to be so averse to situations that are detrimental to our sense gratification. Like we did not like hardship, we didn't want to sleep on the floor. But after we became devotees, we became completely detached to, we have given up all these aversions. And then obhinivesh, attachment to the body and fear from death. Before we became devotees, we were so afraid of dying. Everybody, sometime or other, goes through a death trip. Isn't it? So, but after we become devotees, devotees are not afraid of dying. Because they know death means changing of body. So if we die, we'll get another body. But our only fear is that we do not lose our Krishna consciousness. That is the only fear that a devotee may have, That at the time of death, if I think of a wrong thing, then I may get a kind of a, I may not remember Krishna in my next life. Therefore, devotee's only prayer is that let me become a servant of yours, life after life. Let me be engaged in your service, life after life. So, in this way, we can see that by accepting Krishna consciousness, we become free from all these causes of suffering. Then, Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur is explaining like how one develops his, or one goes through different phases in his devotional service. He's saying the first stage of devotional service, when one becomes a devotee, that stage is called Utsahamayi. Utsahamayi means full of enthusiasm. So when one becomes a devotee, we see that he's very, very enthusiastic. And he compares that enthusiasm to a child getting a new book. He gets a new book and he is very attached to his book. And he feels that now the whole world is seeing me as the most learned person. And he pretends to read all the time, thinking that the whole world is so impressed. And he is so attached to the book that he not only holds on to the book when he is awake, but even in his sleep, he clings on to that book. So that is the first stage of devotional service called Utsahamaya. Then the next stage is called Ghana Tarala. Ghana means thick, intense, dense. And Tarala means dilute, light. So then after a while, his enthusiasm begins to wane. Utsaha begins to reduce. And sometimes he displays an intense mood, an intense attitude of rendering devotional service. But then again, some other time, it becomes dilute. He loses his enthusiasm, his enthusiasm becomes very weak. Like, when he came first, when he joined, he decided that he would chant 64 rounds every day. He would get up at 2 o'clock every morning, and he would eat only once a day, and so on and so forth, and he would render the service, whatever is asked, from him. And that last, that kind of phase lasts only for about 7 days. Then he kind of, he feels the well, let me sleep a little more today. And today by the end of the day I chanted only 8 rounds. Although for last 1 week I thought that I will be chanting 64 rounds every day. But anyway, tomorrow I'll get up at 1 o'clock and cover this 8 rounds. So his enthusiasm becomes, his enthusiasm begins to wane. So that phase is called Hanu Tarula. And sometimes there is some intense mood to render devotional service, and sometimes it is diluted. Then comes the stage called Buddha Vikalpa. Buddha Vikalpa stage is, he faces a conflict within. He feels that, well, I have accepted the process of devotional service, and it has been described that family life is very detrimental to spiritual life. The wife should be considered to be the biggest bondage. The house is the andhukupa. Is a deep, dark well. And if I want to make spiritual advancement, I must get out of this house and family attachment. And I must go to Vrindavan and become absorbed in Krishna consciousness 24 hours a day. And then he begins to think, well, actually the griha is on the coop and my wife is Maya Devi. But what to do? My old father and mother are here. Now, I should not neglect them. And also it has been said that if one leaves home at an immature stage and accepts sannyas, but if he maintains his attachment to material objects, then he will go to hell. So maybe it's safer to stay at home. After all, many devotees, many great devotees are householders. Like there are so many wonderful examples, like Dhruva Maharaj, then Yudhishthira Maharaj, Ramananda Roy, Srinivas Thakur. So anyway, I also can be, I also can remain in my household life and maintain my render devotional service. So that stage is called Buddha Vikalpa. Then the next stage is called Vishaya Sangara. Vishaya means objects of the material nature, and Sangara means war, battle, the battle with the objects of the material nature. He realizes that material nature and spiritual nature are diametrically opposed. Now, if I want to go to West, then I cannot afford to move towards the East. I cannot, in order to go to West, I should not go towards East. So if I want to go to the spiritual, towards the spiritual sky, then I must become free from material attachment. And he sees that how detrimental the objects of the material nature are. And he wants to become free from those attachments. But in this fight with the objects of the material nature, sometimes he wins, sometimes he loses. Sometimes he is able to conquer the allurements of the objects of the material nature, sometimes he is defeated. Then the fifth stage is called Niyamakshama, a Niyam Akshamana. Niyam means the instructions or the rules and regulations. And Akshama means inability to perform them. So he decided that from now on, every day I'm going to chant 100,000 names. and I will offer dandavats to so many devotees, so many times, and I will never think of anything but Krishna, and I will not associate with materialistic people and indulge in Brahma katha, indulge in materialistic discussion. So he makes so many resolutions, to render devotion, to become fixed up in devotional service. But at the end of the day, he sees that he has been able to do that. Like, in spite of all good wishes, he was not able to perform that. So that's the stage of Niyamakshana. Now, the difference Vishal Chakravarti Thakur is saying about Vishal Shambhara and Niyamakshana is that Vishal Shambhara is with the objects of the material nature and inability to win them over. And Niyamakshama is inability to make progress. One is that the inability to win over the allurements of the material nature, and the other is the inability to make progress towards the spiritual nature. And then comes Tarangarangini. Tarangarangini, taranga means waves. And it is said that the waves of the ocean of devotional service are love, puja, pratishtha, distinction, adoration, and profit. The name and fame. Now, when a devotee renders devotional service, when a devotee makes spiritual advancement, then a lot of name and fame, a lot of adoration, a lot of appreciation, a lot of worship come to him naturally. And to float in these waves is called Tarangarangini. To float in these waves is... So Chaitanya Charitamrita, it has been pointed out, this Lab Puja Pratishtha has been compared to Upashakha, the tertiary branches. Like when the creeper grows, like the main stem, the main plant is the creeper. But if there are too many side branches come up, then the main plant, the main creeper will not be able to grow. So these Lab Puja Pratishtha, they have been compared to Upashakha. Upashakha means secondary branch. The primary branch and the secondary branch. So if the secondary branches start to grow, then the main stem will grow. Therefore, it's very important that when at that stage devotee, due to his development and spiritual advancement, starts to get a lot of worship and distinction and adoration, he should not indulge in them. One should be careful to avoid them or to remain detached from them. And then he explained how there are anarthas, and that I'll discuss maybe tomorrow. And he describes there are four kinds of anarthas after that. Those four kinds of anarthas are sukritittho and duskritittho. First is duskritittho anartha. The anarthas generated from duskriti, means wrong activity, sinful activity, detrimental activity. And sukritittho, the anarthas that are caused by pious activity. The anarthas caused by sinful activities and anarthas caused by pious activities. And then অপরাধত্ব,
the unearth is caused by offenses, and the fourth is
ভক্তিত্ব,
the unearth is caused by devotion of service. So there are four kinds of unearth. Maybe we can discuss that tomorrow. Any comment or question? Any question? Yeah, to a lesser or greater degree, yes, everyone goes through. This is scientific, very scientific process actually, very scientific analysis by Vishnu Chakravarti. It happens, but with some these stages, some of these stages are very prominent, with some it is not so prominent. Like for example, the stage of Gura Vikalpa. That conflict, whether I'll stay at home or become a devotee, full-time devotee in the temple, in Vrindavan, on Mayapur. So, say for example, for a person who is a householder, has a business, has a wife and children, and for him it will be very difficult. I mean, this stage for him will be very intense. But for a person, for a young boy like you, it was rather easy, isn't it? But still, there was some feeling was there, mere ghar mein mera marshal, in my house I have my mother, so how can I leave? To some extent that feeling is there, but it's not that strong. Yes, Ramesh Bhai? Seed of devotion. Yeah. The way it has been described in the scripture that it is planted. The Guru actually plants the seed of devotion. And then it gradually grows. You see, although devotion is our birthright in one sense, but still devotion will not develop unless we follow the process. So that process has been classified in different stages, and it has been pointed out that one has to receive the Bhakti Lata Veej, that the seed of devotion through a bona fide process. That faith is reflection of Bhakti. Like you may have faith that if I invest £100,000 in this venture, then I'll make a profit of £200,000. You may have faith, right? But that is the reflection it's a kind of a faith, but that is not the faith like devotion. Up to the five different types or five different reasons for suffering. And then now today we are going to discuss about the stage of anartha nivritti. So yesterday I briefly mentioned that there are four kinds of anarthas. There are anarthas that are caused by sinful activities or sinful desires. They are known as duskritartha, anartha duskriti means bad deeds or sinful
activity. Then Sukriti Uttho Anartha. Sukriti means pious activity. The attachment to different types of enjoyment. Due to one's attachment to different types of enjoyment to the material nature, instead of bhakti, instead of desiring for attachment to Krishna out of devotional service or bhakti, when one desires material enjoyment out of devotional service, then it is called Sukriti Uttho Bhakti, or Bhakti, Sukriti Uttho Anartha, the Anartha due to pious activity, due to piety. An example for that are the demigods. The demigods are aware of Krishna, they are aware of Narayana, and they worship Narayana. They worship Narayana, but actually they don't want pure devotional service. They don't want unalloyed attachment or unalloyed devotional service to Vishnu or Narayana. They worship Narayana so that he would take care of the demons who actually create disturbance to them in the heavenly planet. They create, those who create disturbance to the enjoyment in heaven. So they actually pray to Krishna, pray, Krishna please deliver us from this suffering. The demons are causing, the asuras are causing so much distress for us. The vaisyas are causing distress. So they actually pray or worship Krishna. Now this is a kind of anartha. Then this anartha is due to their attachment to different types of sense gratification. Then there is another kind of anartha that generates from offenses. There are two kinds of offenses, seva parad and nama parad. Offenses in serving the Lord and offenses to the holy name. And in this chapter it has been pointed out that seva aparad is not that bad, because by taking shelter of the holy name one can become free from seva aparad. But there is no way to become free from nama aparad. So nama aparad is the worst kind of offense. And it's a very bad anartha. So one of the worst anarthas is actually nama aparad. And out of nama aparad, the worst aparad is committing sinful activities on the strength of the holy name. Because when one commits sinful activities on the strength of the holy name, then gradually becomes more and more sinful. By indulging in sinful activities on the strength of the holy name, now one becomes more and more sinful. And as a result of that, he loses the chance of developing any attachment to the holy name. And also another very bad offense is Vaishnava Aparad. So Vaishnava Aparad and this Nama Aparad, the first Aparad, the first offense to the holy name and the seventh offense to the holy name are the worst of all offenses. Then Bhakti Uttha. To gain wealth, name and fame by rendering devotional service. That is called bhakti uttha, anartha generating from devotional service.
When one renders devotional service for the sake of distinction, adoration and profit, then that is called bhakti utsa anartha. Anartha, that is generated from devotional service. So, therefore Chaitanya Mahaprabhu instructed that those who accept this path of devotional service, they must become more humble than a blade of grass and more tolerant than a tree. Yesterday we discussed the last stage of this impediment of devotion is taranga rangini. As a result of rendering devotional service, one begins to get distinction, adoration, distinction, adoration, worship. And these are the waves in the ocean of devotion. And in this stage, one begins to float in the waves of distinction, adoration, taranga rangini. He enjoys all the glorification and worship that comes along with devotion. So, a devotee must become free from all these anarthas. So, and now, Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur will describe that there are five ways to become free from these four kinds of anarthas. So, four kinds of anarthas I mentioned today, and there are five different ways to become free from these anarthas. They are Eko Desha Vartini, that situated at one point in one location. Bahu Desha Vartini, it's variegated. Then Praichi, partial, Purna, complete, and Astantiki, absolute. So there are five gradual development of anartha nivritti. So there, those five gradual developments I will discuss tomorrow. Any question, any comment?
There are so many enjoyable situations that the devotee can find himself in. So, how do you actually adopt the mentality? What's wrong with enjoying?
Yes.
Those things that come naturally to the performance of service.
Yeah. See, our way actually is anāśaktaśya viṣayāṁ yathārham upajñjato nirvandha krishna sambandhi yukta vairāgya-mucchi, as described by Rupa Goswami. Our way is yukta vairāgya, renunciation in attachment. And the definition of that is anāśaktaśya viṣayāṁ, being internally detached from the objects of the senses. Jatharam upajunjati, accept whatever is necessary. Not for our self gratification, but to render service to Krishna. Nirbandha Krishna Samandhi. Accept everything that is used, that can be used in Krishna's service. And that is called Yukta Vairagya. So Prabhupada actually gave us the process of Yukta Vairagya. And the most important consideration is that we should have a mood of detachment. We should be internally detached. And with that, we just, like with the way we are doing, we are living in big buildings, we are riding, driving cars, we are, flying from one part of the world to the other part of the world. We are using all facilities
apparently which is not meant, apparently which is detrimental to spiritual life. Like in India, people did not, in the early days, people didn't go across the ocean. People did not ride on a vehicle. They wouldn't even ride on a bullock cart, right? They would walk on foot. But what we are doing does not really, collide or does not really fit into that concept of a spiritual life that they used to have those days. And it's a new trend. It's actually a revolution in spiritual activity, which has been established by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in the name of in the form of Sankirtan. The word Sankirtan has two connotations. One is collective endeavor to glorify Krishna. Bahuvir Vilista Jasmin Kirtanam. When many people get together to chant the glory of the Lord, that is Sankirtan. But the other meaning of Sankirtan is to use everything in glorifying the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And that's actually the higher mood, the higher understanding of Sankirtan. And, this mood has been, very wonderfully established recently by Śrīla Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur and then His Divine Grace Śrīla Prabhupāda. Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, when moving the deity to Bagh Bazar Gaudiya Math, it was a marble temple that was built under him. It's a beautiful temple. Prior to that, they were living in a small house. And then, they built the temple and they were moving in there. So while going, taking the deities, Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur was singing a song that was Pujalo Ragopatho Gaurava Bhange Matalo Sadhujano Vishaya Range. The Pujalo Ragopatho Gaurava Bhange, giving up the path of awe and reverence of Vaidhi Bhakti. The path of Rag Bhakti, spontaneous devotional service, has been accepted. And as a result of that, the sadhus have become involved in Vishaya Rangi, become involved in apparently materialistic activities. Like, these activities are apparently materialistic. Sadhus are riding in cars, living in big houses, and flying aeroplanes, using fax machines, computers. But the ultimate consideration actually is whether it's for Krishna or for sensual gratification. And Prabhupada's mood was even more broad. Prabhupada at one time he said that if necessary we'll even use an atom bomb in Krishna's service. So for his devotee, a pure devotee can use everything in Krishna's service in order to glorify Krishna. And actually, devotees do that. Arjuna was using atom bombs. What to speak of atom bombs? Arjuna was using Brahmastra, right? For Krishna. So that is Sankirtan. See, a devotee doesn't want to enjoy. That's the thing about a devotee. A devotee doesn't want to enjoy, but he simply wants to provide for Krishna's enjoyment. And just by being engaged in providing for Krishna's enjoyment, he receives Krishna's remnant, and which is actually the highest enjoyment. Although he doesn't want it, but Krishna gives it to him. And when Krishna offers, he says, okay, Krishna, let me use it in your service. A devotee offers, the devotee collects food grain, cooks the most delicious foodstuffs. When he's cooking, he's not thinking about his, you know, he's enjoying the food. He's not thinking of enjoying the food himself. He's simply thinking about Krishna's enjoyment. And he offers it to Krishna. And Krishna offers it back to him as his remnant, as his prasad. And the devotee receives it as Krishna's prasad. And he enjoys being tuned up to Krishna's enjoyment. So that is the unique position of a devotee. And that's the unique difference between a materialist and a spiritualist, especially a devotee. A materialist is constantly trying to enjoy himself. But as a result of that, he simply ends up becoming frustrated and miserable. But a devotee doesn't want any enjoyment whatsoever. He sacrificed everything. All he cares for is Krishna's comfort and Krishna's devotee's comfort. But
describe different states of devotion. One of the devotees says that he's going through a terrible hardship. Describe the glory of the condition of sometimes using them for himself. Now, when it fails, what should he do? At that point, he can take.
Yeah. Sometimes a devotee, he resolves within his mind that he would become fixed up in devotional service. Sometimes he succeeds, sometimes he fails. What should one do when one fails? Well, he should try harder. Keep trying in the association of devotees. The most important consideration is actually the association of devotees. We must continue our struggle against all the impediments to devotional service in the association of devotees. The association of devotees is like when you're climbing a mountain, if we are alone and if we slip, then it's finished. There is no question of continuing. Right? But if we are in association, if we're climbing a mountain in a group, then even though I'm asleep, the others will help me. They may even carry me up to the top of the mountain. Yeah, ultimately the root is the material attachment. Ultimately the root is mistaking the body to be myself. That is the ultimate root. So the ultimate, then why are we mistaking our body to be ourselves? Because of a forgetfulness of Krishna. So ultimate root is our forgetfulness of Krishna. The ultimate avidya is our ignorance of Krishna. Yeah, that's another kind of the austerity Unnecessary austerity makes the heart hard or dry. You see, devotion ultimately makes the heart soft. But any activity apart from devotion makes the heart hard. Yes, actually, austerities and penances make the heart hard. Because how? Because instead of depending upon Krishna, one is actually trying to become independent. Actually, the best thing is just to depend upon Krishna. Like if you have a rich father, then best thing is to just go to your father and stretch your hand, give him money. But if you, in spite of having a rich father, if you think, no, I will go and I'll make money, and then you just go to a factory and work day and night, you neither become rich, nor do you enjoy, you just become miserable, even more. So those who are trying to, those who are performing austerities and yogas and things, they are simply endeavoring to become rich themselves, although they have a rich father. So they are actually very stupid, very foolish. The most intelligent thing is to just go to your father. Especially when you have a father who is the richest, who is the supreme proprietor. Why worry? All you have to do is just go to a temple and ask Krishna, Krishna, for your service I want this. Krishna will immediately give it. Not immediately, but Krishna will make arrangements. We don't have to worry about anything. We must always remember that we are serving the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And He will always take care of us. Especially when we want to serve Him. Does a rich man's servant have any scarcity? Especially when he's serving, his only intention is to serve his master. His master will provide him with everything that he needs. Similarly, devotees will always be provided for all that they need. The service. Yes, Ramananda. That's an anartha. Yeah. We should be only concerned about our service to Krishna and not desire anything for ourselves. How do we give it up? With knowledge. If I know that I am a servant of Krishna, then what do we need for myself? Does the servant have any special demand? No. Therefore the servant's attitude is, Marubi Rakhubi Jo Ichha Tuhai. If you want to keep me or you want to kill me, it's up to you. Because I am an eternal servant. And you have your full right over me. So that is the mood of a devotee. You see, when you talk about service, the service is unconditional. You see, if we say that, well, only I'll serve only if you pay me or give me this facility, then it is not service. Then it's a job. Then it's a contract. Then it's business. But Krishna consciousness is not a contract like that. Krishna consciousness is unconditional. I am your servant. You bought me off. Right? The servant here actually means the slave. If your slave doesn't have any right for anything, a paid servant may have, and the paid servant may say, okay, if you don't pay, I'll work. Right? But a slave doesn't have that kind of right. The slave has been purchased by the master. And the slave, of course, now there is no slavery. But the master could do anything. Devotee doesn't say that Krishna, only when you treat me nicely, I will become your devotee, and when you handle roughly with me, then I will quit. No. On the other hand, pure devotee's mood is Asli Shoga Padaratan Pinashtuman Adarshanan Marmahatan Karechuda. You embrace me or you kick me out. I am just your eternal servant, and you can do anything that you want to do. Because I am just your eternal servant. Today we'll briefly revise what we discussed about Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur's Madhurya Kadambini the last 2-3 days. Just, and then after that maybe we can discuss about today's Parikrama. So, in Madhurya Kadambini, in the very beginning, Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur pointed out that devotional service is possible only by the mercy of a devotee. There is no other way, or there is no other reason for devotional service. The only means to achieve devotion to Krishna is the mercy of a devotee. And then he pointed out that when one receives the seed of devotional service from a pure devotee, then he starts to water that seed with the water of hearing and chanting, and if the field of the heart is fertile, or rather if the field of the heart of the person is not barren and dry like a desert, what makes our heart dry and barren? Who will say? Ramananda? Huh? Sinful activities. It is due to our sinful activities that our hearts become barren. When a person becomes very sinful and he doesn't want to give up his sinful propensities, one may be sinful, but if after receiving the seed of devotion he resolves not to commit any more sin, then he will become, very quickly he will become free from his sinful reaction. But if one continues to commit sinful activities, then it's very, very dangerous. So when one receives the devotional service, the seed of pure devotional service, then one must give up sinful life. Therefore, Srila Prabhupada instituted, Srila Prabhupada made it a policy that every member of ISKCON should follow the four regulative principles. Those four regulative principles are meant for guarding us from committing any more sin. Or these four regulative principles actually free ourselves from the influence of sin. Just like an animal stands on four legs, sin personified stands on these four legs. Meat eating, intoxication, gambling, and illicit sex. But when one stops these activities, then sin becomes completely helpless. Just like an animal with all his four legs broken. If an animal has his legs broken, no matter how ferocious that animal may be, it will be completely helpless. Even a lion, if his legs are broken, won't do anything to us. Similarly, sin cannot do anything to us when we abstain from committing those four sinful activities. So, Srila Prabhupada very emphatically pointed that out to us, and he wanted that every member of the society should follow this four regulative principles. When one breaks these regulative principles, then he must be removed from ISKCON. So, when the heart is free from sin, and as a result of that, when the heart becomes fertile, and if on that fertile land the seed of devotional service is planted, and if we regularly water these plants, water the seeds with hearing and chanting, then in due course of time the seed sprouts into a seedling. And as it comes out, as a seedling, then it develops two leaves, two tender leaves that comes out with the seedling. And those two leaves are Kleshagni and Shubhada. Kleshagni means it destroys all inauspiciousness or all suffering. It frees us from all kinds of suffering. And it bestows all auspiciousness upon us. So as soon as one takes to devotional service and starts to follow the process, following the process actually means when one becomes interested, when one becomes attracted to Krishna consciousness and moves into the temple, then he automatically, in the association of devotees, regularly begins to hear and chant. He regularly hears from the advanced devotees, and he chants prescribed number of rounds, and he reads Prabhupada's books. So through this process of hearing and chanting regularly, his devotional kripa begins to grow. And the first manifestation, the first development
The first stage of development is he becomes free from suffering and Shubhoda. He receives all auspiciousness. That we have noticed, like as soon as we fully surrender ourselves to Krishna, as soon as we take shelter of the temple, then we do not have to struggle anymore for our existence. And we become gradually free from all inauspiciousness and all suffering. Then Vishwan Chakravarti Thakur pointed out, there are five kinds of suffering. What are those five kinds of suffering? Avidya, Asmita, Rag, Dvesh and Abhinivesh. Did you all take notes? Anyway, maybe Balaram, you can print out and give them things. Avidya means ignorance. What is the definition of ignorance? What is the meaning of ignorance? Very good. To consider temporary to be permanent. To consider illusion to be real. That is avidya. Asmita means the second one, the feeling of me and mine. The me and mine comes from the concept that I am this body. When I think that I am this body, then everything related to this body is mine. And we mistakenly identify ourselves with our body, and we mistakenly think that anything that is related to the body is mine. Rag, the third one, rag means rag means attachment to enjoy, sense gratification. And dvesh means aversion to what? Aversion to things that are detrimental to our sense gratification. Anything that doesn't give us sense gratification, we just want to want that those things did not exist. And abhinivesh means to be absorbed with the objects of sense gratification. So these are the five causes of suffering. Now, one who takes to Krishna consciousness becomes free from these five kleshas. Avidya, Asmita, Rag, Dvesh and Abhinivesh. Then there are gradual, then one gradually begins to go through different phases of devotion. Now what are those, how many phases are there that one goes through before one comes to the stage of anartha nivritti, free from detrimental impediments in the path of devotional service? Six. What are those six? Who can say the first one? Who can name the first one? The first one is called enthusiasm. Utsaho means enthusiasm. Utsaho means full of enthusiasm. Just as a little child, when he gets his first book, he is very attached to the book. He thinks that he has become the most learned scholar, and he thinks that everybody is looking at him as if he is such a learned scholar. I'm sure it happened to everybody.
I remember, anyway, it happened to me. So, Utsavagri. So when one first joins, when one first takes to Krishna consciousness, he is also full of enthusiasm. But then, his enthusiasm begins to fade. Then, he goes through a stage when he is sometimes enthusiastic, sometimes he is not so enthusiastic. Actually, most of the time he is not so enthusiastic. That stage is called Ghanatarala. Dense and dilute. Thick and thin. Sometimes he is very fired up, and sometimes he feels like, what's the point? What's the use of being engaged in devotional service? Maybe better to go back home. Like, in the temple, they don't care for me. All they want me to do is just wash pots and do all kinds of odd jobs. Everyone is giving me order and no one else is doing anything. I have to do everything. I'm not going to do anything anymore. But when he joined, then he was very fired up. Very enthusiastic. When he joined, he was ready to do anything. He was asked to clean the toilet, and he made the toilet look like a bedroom. He made it very clean. He was asked to work in the field. He worked till sunset, and he was asked to do so many, whatever he was asked to do, he always did it very, very sincerely. But then his sincerity began to wane, his enthusiasm began to wane, and he came to a stage of Anantarana. Then he comes to the first stage, which has been defined as Buddha Vikalpa. Buddha Vikalpa means he is in a conflict, what to do and what not to do. He feels that the family life is actually detrimental to spiritual advancement. But somehow he got married, so he feels that I'll just give up my wife and children and go to Vrindavan. After all, my wife is just a unnecessary burden on my back, and my house is a Grihamandha Kupam, is a deep dark well, so why should I stay in the house? So I should go to Vrindavan and just be completely absorbed in Krishna conscious activity. But then he begins to consider, but I have my old father and mother at home. It is not good to leave them like that. If I leave, then who will take care of them? And also it has been said that if one takes sannyas immaturely, and if it falls down, then it is very bad, one goes to hell. So I should not immaturely think of taking sannyas. Anyway, many devotees, there were many devotees who were in household life, so I also can follow their footsteps. And so better to stay at home. So this is Buddha Vikalpa. Then what's the fourth stage, Ramananda? Vishaya Shangara. Vishaya means objects of the senses or material nature. And Shangara means? Shangara means war, battle. war with the material nature, battle with material nature. The material nature is trying to pull him, and he says, no, I will not. So he fights with the material nature, fights with the objects of the senses, fights with the allurements of this nature. So Vishaya Shangara. So in this fight, sometimes he wins, sometimes he loses. He resolves that he will not look at these things, look at the different allurements of the material nature. But then sometimes he is able to control himself, sometimes he can't control himself. Then the next stage is, who will say? The fifth stage is called Niyamakshama. Niyamakshama, Niyama means rules and regulation. And Akham means unable. Unable to follow the rules and regulation. He resolves within his mind of following different standards. He thinks that he will chant so many rounds, he will not associate with non-devotees, he will not act in such a way which is detrimental to Krishna consciousness. But then he is unable to keep his vow, unable to practice that. That's called Niyamakshama. Then the sixth stage is very good. Taranga Rangini. Floating in the waves of the ocean of devotion. Like surfing in the ocean. Like in the West you see people are surfing. They are enjoying the waves. Right? So devotees also at that stage enjoy the waves of devotion, ocean of devotion. And what are those waves? The waves are distinction, adoration and profit. Worship. So, naturally, at certain stage, when one makes certain degree of advancement, he gets some worship. He gets some recognition.